Hello, I'm Kyle Menzies.
And I am Jason Rutherford, and I am the creator of the Animal Showcase. Tonight, Ripping Off Dignation is recording this live from our couch in our front room because I am too lazy to clean out the HeroScape figures on our kitchen table. Also, something about MechWarrior planetary campaigns, but whatever. All this and more tonight on the Tabletop Battlefield. Welcome to episode 9 of the Tabletop Battlefield here on a cold, freezing Easter Sunday. So, hope you guys had a good day. And
it's Canada's fault.
It's all Canada. It's blame Canada. The cold air from Canada.
But it really is coming from Canada. Yeah, they're holding the pressure over here and nothing's moving.
Well, yeah. Just the whole country's kind of cold. But just a funny little story about just how cold it is around here. One of the little Easter festivities that a local town does is called the Marshmallow Drop. I don't know if you saw this in the paper or not, but They have the parents and their kids go out in this empty field and they drop marshmallows from the helicopter and get them back up. The fact is, the whole idea of, I don't know, like, kids picking up marshmallows off the ground, this doesn't seem like a good idea to begin with. I mean, like, it lands in dirt, grass, and geese crap.
Do they eat it right after they
pick it up? I hope not. I mean, there could be some nasty stuff in that field, but it was so cold this year. There was some concern. I don't think it happened. There was some concern that if they dropped the marshmallows from high enough,
they would freeze.
They'd freeze up. These kids and parents would be stuck in this man-made hailstorm. Oh my goodness! That would be hilarious if that happened. But
wow.
I don't think it did. So.
Oh, that's disappointing.
That's disappointing. Well, maybe next year when it's freezing cold again. But
well, let's hope not.
Yeah, let's hope not. Can't get much worse than this weather.
Well,
it can, actually.
Yes, we're in Michigan, after all.
For those who don't know, look up 1974 Easter weekend. You'll find that was weather was a lot worse.
Oh, yeah.
Largest super outbreak of tornadoes.
Good thing
in history.
I wasn't there.
Yeah, neither of us are alive back then, but my parents were, and it was not a fun weekend.
All right.
So, anyway, like I mentioned, we're going to continue where we left off back in episode number 7 with the little MechWarrior planetary campaign things. Yeah. And before we dive into more detailed stuff, I came up with one more mission scenario idea when I was reading the MechWarrior book, Surrender Your Dreams. So this is not really a spoiler from the book, it's because it's about 50 pages into the book. But one of the objectives they're trying to do is they're trying to drop into a Jade Falcon-held planet and capture a couple scientists and pull out. So the thing is that the Falcons don't know where the good guys are trying to get to, what building the scientists are in. So they're coming from the outside of the city trying to, you know, attack and repel them back. Yeah. So what you could do is the attacker, at the start of the game, you know, build up a city, have them land, say, maybe on one end of the city, and they randomly choose, or they are randomly assigned basically a building that they only know is the target. They don't, you know, each building has a number, like in the exfiltration scenario kind of thing. But whereas in the exfiltration scenario, you knew the building, and this time I know the building, as I'm the attacker. So I'm trying to get APC to this building, because I know where I'm going, as you as the defender of the city doesn't know.
But would there be, like, would I have, like, more, like, a different place, like, instead of starting from the back before, from the barracks and mech base? Because, you know, you could easily just pick a building that's, you know, right out there,
yeah.
That's right at the edge, take it, and then go before I can even do anything.
It would depend on the scenario. I'd say, like, you know, if I'm launch an ambush on you, you'd probably start further out in the outer areas. However, maybe you're running, if you know I'm coming, you're running patrols through the city, so you have more units overall, but you're deployed in different spots throughout the city. So, you know, you got a couple different patrols, then you can immediately gauge my forces. So if I'm going for a really close building, you can just try to pin me down and tie me down long enough to bring your heavier reinforcements and do more damage to me. So
possibly. Right.
It'd be something to try out. So let's dive into expanding this now from beyond just a single battle or even a multi-phase battle into, say you're trying to do a planetary campaign. I know a couple of years back, and it's been a couple of years.
It's been since the beginning of this game when I had my multi...
5 years.
Yeah, I had my Technicolor army of crap.
Talk about that one. The campaign we played where we had, you were the defender of the planet with your multicolor Technicolor army of crap.
Oh. God.
Led by the always heroic Caden Senn.
The walking brick.
The walking brick. Critical miss. Critical miss. Critical miss.
Hey, at least you had critical missed against a peasant company.
Ooh, beer.
They threw beer in front of you and you shot yourself in the foot.
I don't know what we did. We managed to do something stupid. But
and you killed yourself with that critical
miss.
Yeah,
we did kill myself. I had a Bancerator Raiden Battle Armor, which now is a 14-point infantry guy. He had one life left. He had a peasant company.
A Bancerator.
Bancerator peasant company. I had close combated him. Double ones, critical miss. I somehow burst into flames. And he sits here in his last every time with that stupid one little event. Like, I feel like when Caden Sen, your guy, critical missed my Raid of Battle Armor twice. Twice in a row because he has two clicks of hardened armor to start. He blew through both two clicks of his hardened armor because he can't shoot some freaking infantry without his auto cannons blowing
up.
Hey,
that's. I guess that is worse.
Well, he's a Highlander. He doesn't know what he's shooting at. He doesn't know how to shoot. So.
As I said, he's walking brick.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, back, the reason I mentioned that whole little escapade was the campaign. Remember, we had a bunch of the cards that were shaped, obviously, you know, like normal baseball card size. And I had a little grid built out where you had the city, which I was trying to take, and I was landing in different spots. Because the idea was at the start, you know, when we created a whole list of our units, I remember I made you force you to create an Excel spreadsheet of all the units that drove you crazy up the wall. Like, I don't want to do this, but...
Yeah.
And you kept very detailed stats of how much damage you guys had taken. And I was doing very detailed things about... I had, like, little calculations of how percentage my army was damaged, how percentage was destroyed. I was obsessed with that little details.
God.
But
and we barely used that at all.
Yeah, that was only for my entertainment. I like micromanaging numbers, like that kind of stuff. But it was
okay, you can be an accountant.
I don't know. I'm not touching all that money. I'm not going to make some creative bookkeeping. And, who sold back? Who
and
kept
Raj?
The back stock options? What? What? No, no. Every tech CEO in the world.
What? This pension doesn't exist?
Not anymore. Because someone got a new yacht! Seriously, back to... We got these random laughing topics. Seriously, though, because the different squares in the board were... What they were the different terrain types. Like, you know, the main one was the city where you had, say, five buildings. There was, like, hills where you have one or two elevated terrains, a few hindering terrains, a farm, which is a lot of hindering terrain, and one small building.
And then we decided how many we would put in,
mm-hmm.
point-wise, of our army, maximum, up to a maximum of 1,000, I think.
1,800. It depends on how big your armies were. So, I mean,
yeah.
That was good.
And
that
how much was damaged and how much needed to be repaired.
Because that was always an interesting little tactic, because, you know, you had a range of how much you wanted to deploy, because how it would work is, basically there would be a mega turn where you launch three battles, and you cannot, obviously the same unit can't participate in the same battle the same day. So if you started running low on units, as we started to do after the first one or two mega turns, you couldn't commit a full force, say 1,000 points, to a battle. So you'd choose which ones did you want to try to delay at and win, and which ones you try to want to, you know, push harder at to win. So, I mean, like, that was where you had the little objectives, you know, where you had to take the objectives, and you had a random choice of which objectives you had to capture.
And then, how many did we have to capture to win?
Four.
Four?
Because there's six on the table total. And we ran.
I only won,
four.
What, one?
You only won once because you outnumbered me. Even that time, I did significant damage to you.
Okay, it wasn't my fault, okay?
Yeah, your army did blow.
And you had actual Banson Raider army, so...
Yeah, I don't know, Pure Faction Banson Raider army has lots of repair vehicles.
Now that I have Pure Faction Steel Wolves and Stormhammers, I'm a lot better off.
Okay, we should do that again sometime. You know, set up a little grid out and go from there.
Yeah, that'd be...
The one thing about, neat thing about how we decided who attacked and who defended is what we had was called the initiative bar, kind of, or I don't want to say initiative bar, but yeah, it was basically a number. Initially, it went from 1 to 12. The reason it went from that is because what you do is when you're ready to start the battle, you'd roll 2d6. And if it was less than the number, then the attacker, who was the attacker of the entire planet, got to choose where the battle was going to take place. It had to be to adjacent to a spot he controlled. And if it was higher than the number, the defender got to choose where the battle was going to take place. They could try to retake a square they had lost the attacker.
Where you actually had to have the same forces.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I never won once of those initiatives.
No, you never. Well, no, you never did. You didn't last too long. You think your technical army a crap, but that really wasn't your fault. So,
Yeah.
But anyway, how the game started off then is, as say I was the attacker of the whole thing, I started off with an initiative bonus of 12 the first round. So therefore, the first three rounds, I was choosing where I could attack. And then how it would work is, if you won a battle, your score would go up by one, and obviously, well, if the attacker won a battle, the score would go up by one. If the defender won a battle, the score would go down by one.
Yeah.
And in the first, after each turn, for the first, was it first three, first, after the first turn, I would lose a 5 to my bonus. So the second turn, second mega turn, I only have a 7 bonus. So you know, it'd be still a little bit mostly in my favor in terms of the battle, but you have a chance to strike back my initial landing spots.
Yeah.
And then also, the second turn after that, I lose another 5, so I'd only have a 2 bonus for the third turn, and then obviously after that, we'd be an even ground in terms of who would be fighting. So after about 3 turns, I lost all my bonus, and you would have a little bit of an advantage, so you would, and you'd be fighting back and forth a little bit until one side eventually surrenders. But so that's just one of the ways you can do a planetary campaign. I mean, that's obviously a very highly detailed way of doing it. You can do a more abstract approach where you've got maybe just, say, choose 2 or 3 battles.
Don't have too much time on it in your hands, unlike us.
Yeah. It all depends on, you know, how big is the battle in terms of the overall scheme of things. If it's just one planetary battle, doing on a highly detailed thing like that, or maybe you're raging a galactic campaign where you're going from planet to planet to planet,
and then, you know, you could have your own little storyline to go with it, depending on,
here's where your brain dump comes in.
Yeah, where you go, you know, kind of like almost like in, you know, role playing, where you have, you know, the what's it called, Dungeon Master or something.
Dungeon Master, yeah.
Yeah.
Dungeon Dragon.
Where, so, you know, he has a whole, you know, usually a storyline, but you can go wherever you want. In this case, you know, same type of person where, you know, if certain things happen, you know, maybe a political uprising occurs on another planet. You know, like in, if it's like a mercenary campaign, like we were discussing recently, you could do so much with a storyline. You could, you know, have it go like 5 different ways, just like in MechWarrior 4 Mercenaries.
Mm-hmm.
Except in the end, Katrina does lose completely, but...
Well, that's obviously if you're following a more traditional... Well, obviously following a historical about the campaign. I mean, set in the Word of Blake right now, you could go wherever you... Word of Blake Jihad, you go wherever you want, since obviously, well, that's still being written, but...
Yeah.
So, I mean, like... Along those ideas of more of even expanding beyond a galactic, like in the galactic campaign, now you're saying that, like, you start off with a certain amount of points. You say, oh, maybe you got 1,000 points to build your mercenary force.
Exactly,
first.
You know, because you're just, you know, starting up. You wouldn't have much for a mercenary force, but you want to still build and, you know, expand. You know, hopefully get as much as any other of the big guys, you know, so that, you know, nobody pushes you around.
I ain't gonna take no crap from none of those little steel wolf or wolf hunters.
Well, steel wolves don't exist anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah, they really don't. They're the wolf hunters now.
Yeah, wolf hunters or the clan wolf. If clan wolf ever let them in.
Some of them might, but I don't know. I don't think clan... I don't know. I'm not familiar with the whole clan wolf storyline. I haven't read that book yet, so...
Okay.
I read the wolf hunters book, talk a little bit about that, but not too much.
Oh, yeah? You got the wolf hunters book?
Mm-hmm. You wanted to borrow like 2 months ago, I haven't given it to you yet.
I'm reading it now.
Yeah, I'll give it to you tonight. But so, I mean, obviously then each mission you complete, I mean, you could do it where, you know, you have maybe have one mission on a planet, or you could do it more like MechWarrior 4, you know, you choose a planet, and there'd obviously be like 3 or 4 missions you can complete.
Yeah, or you could have one where if you win or lose a certain battle, you know, certain types of battles will come up either on that planet or different planets based on how the, you know, politics or, you know, how things are going within the universe.
Mm-hmm.
You can do so much. I mean, especially if you have a lot of time on your hands. I mean, and need something to do.
The guys that introduced me to Babylon 5, the Call to Arms game, they literally were playing a single campaign across the entire galaxy for a year.
Oh, my God.
It had a very unclimactic ending to it, but we'll talk about that sometime when we do actually talk about Babylon 5. But
okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you. But, So, I mean, like, if you're writing a story, or, I mean, even, like, you're saying, I know one of your ideas you had before was you create a time track, much like, obviously, you know, MechWarrior 2 Mercenaries, where you had, this campaign was kind of an independent thing, it was only available for, say, 2 months or 3 months.
Yeah, exactly, time frame.
But yeah, obviously, it'd probably be a, easier in game terms, instead of trying to think of, you know, time frames and months and days and years, make them actually, like, like campaign terms. You have a campaign turn where all the battles
like
a
tree?
So, yeah. Not a tree. I'm thinking,
like, I meant where you have, certain ones that can go certain things.
Well, yeah, that's what you're saying. I'm thinking
branching out.
And what I'm talking about is a campaign turn, like a time limit for how long a turn in the campaign lasts.
Okay.
So, you
could do either one.
You would deploy, say, if you choose where you're going to attack, resolve the battle, and that'd be one campaign turn. And then you also...
Okay.
You know, essentially, one campaign turn, you go to, say, like 1 or 2 months of real lifetime. So, therefore, you'd say this little contract is here is available for, say, 1 or 2 campaign turns. You got to take it.
Yeah.
And that'll make it easier instead of saying it's available for 3 months and 6 weeks. You know, it's like, what the heck?
What's a week?
Yeah. You gotta sit down.
Is that in real time? I can get to that campaign.
Yeah.
We have to play all night. Come on.
Keep playing now. And another thing, you get even more detail where, you might be allowed, say, depending on who's giving you the contract, you've got certain dropships available to you. So you may only be able to deploy initially, say, maybe 400 points of forces in the mission.
Yeah.
But you could probably bribe them by giving them more money, allow you to drop more troops on.
Yeah.
Or you could. And
did
that way
we ever use money, though, in our scenarios?
Not in playing MechWarrior Dark Age. You know, we haven't had around. We did a classic Battletech a little bit back in the days when we run some mercenary campaigns, that
so
and
it's
Slayer 7.
It's possible
action.
You could do that same way, in this case, but I just wanted to try and simplify it down with just, game points.
Yeah.
How many you could buy for.
Yeah.
I mean, the points could equal, like, maybe a dollar, possible dollar value, I guess, but...
When I say money, I mean, I'm referring to, like, just make it equal to points, in terms of MechWarrior points.
Okay.
You don't want to sit here and try to do a conversion factor of 1,000, but 100 points is 1,672 C-bills? No. Yeah. No, just thinking, when I say money, I'm referring to points, so...
Okay. So it's the same thing.
Yeah, same kind of thing.
All right.
And like, other ideas you had were, like, obviously... Oh, no. I'm drawing a blank.
Uh-oh.
No!
Monkeys are ruling the world again! They're controlling your mind! Free them! Free from the monkeys!
Look, I thought we were going to try to stay away from monkey discussions this time, but... No.
When did I say we went?
I meant to say that! I meant to
you
say that!
You never did, though.
I never did say that, but that, I did
I
mean
found
to say
the loophole.
That. You did say that, but... But I guess you could think about in terms of obviously then you assign a certain point value to completing the missions, obviously you buy the contracts and blah 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 back and forth. But one thing I'm interested in trying to think of is an abstract way of space combat. Because obviously MechWarrior Dark Age also aerospace support. I mean you would almost always want to have aerospace support. It's in every single book and MechWarrior books and BattleTech books.
And it's even in the games as useless as they are.
Yeah, MechWarrior 4, the aerospace players, are totally worthless.
They're more worthless than MechWarrior 2 mercenaries because they don't show up half the time. They're just like somewhere off on the board. I'm like, I need my support here. Where are you? Oh, no, I'm way 5 kilometers away, flying around in a circle.
Yeah, it's true. They were. I never even bothered to recruit them in MechWarrior 2. I mean, like,
they cost a lot of money to recruit, too. Like, 75,000 is one of them.
Is that just permission, too?
Yeah, I don't think it's permission. No. I think it was just, you hired them, and then you had to pay monthly expense.
So that'd be an interesting idea. You have to do upkeep and repairs. That's what I was thinking of. Obviously, you've got to pay a certain amount to repair your guys, and, obviously in MechWarrior Dark Age, they introduced the idea of being able to repair units in the field. Like, that should be more expensive, maybe almost upwards of twice as much to repair a unit as it would, if you're back in your
because
dread
you're not really kind of fighting on the well I mean once you
you're using welding torches instead of duct tape
duct tape
and bubblegum.
Oh my god, you and your pants and raiders.
We could duct tape anything back together. Need a gauss rifle? I can put a little duct tape.
Actually being able to repair past the repair markers is also important.
Mm-hmm. I'd say, obviously, on the battle, you obviously can't, as you can.
Oh, yeah, you can't.
Inside space, you can do whatever you want. You can, and you could, with the addition of the special equipment that they add in Age of Destruction, you can swap that out between battles, And yeah. When you're back in your dropship, buy points, take it off, and...
And that could be another thing where you could actually buy the, you know, the point card, mm-hmm. You know, special equipment to be able to add on to them.
I wonder, if you were to do that, would the special equipment be good forever, or would it be like on a per-battle basis almost? Like, you give you buy a lot of Inferno ammo, you can't use it forever. But...
Well, that's another thing to discuss, but also, you know, it probably costs money to put it onto the onto the actual, you know, unit and take it off.
That might be the better way of handling it. You pay the set price when you buy it, but then you pay a certain amount of money to load it on.
Yeah, per point, like one for every 10, mm-hmm. 10 points or something.
To load it on and take it off. And like you pay maybe an upkeep cost, you know, like a tenth of its value or a twentieth of the value per battle. Yeah. So that way, you bought the initial stockpile, and this is a little bit extra to do the maintenance work and things. Yeah, that'd be a good idea to think about.
But that's just... we're now getting way into it now. I mean, that's some things that, most people, I don't think, ever really considered.
There's not a whole lot of details about about more advanced rules of mechware, because a lot of people are all big on keep it as simple as possible. They get on the forums, they all just yell, "Don't try to make this into classic BattleTech! Don't," you know, it's like, and they go out and announce, like what was that? It's just a little joke. When I was reading a forum, a guy said that, "Well, let's keep this rule simple, let's not try to make it about classic BattleTech." Then he went on to mention, "Well, we need to add the ability so all units can move and shoot." Oh, wait a minute, classic BattleTech had that, look where he doesn't. "How about anti-battle mech infantry?" Oh, wait, that's also classic BattleTech rule. "How about the ability that only missiles can do indirect fire?" Wait, that's BattleTech rule as well. But, you know, it's just... obviously, I can understand people not wanting to add a ton of extra rules to the game. It's just
I think it was originally designed for, you know, younger generation who hasn't, you know, been exposed to BattleTech. But most of the people that are, you know, actually into, you know, BattleTech and MechWarrior tend to be actually, you know, the older generation.
At least the BattleTech players are much generally older. They're usually your older adults, and you go to MechWarrior, you got a bunch of 6-year-old kids.
Well, there's really isn't any difference. You know, anybody
difference?
There's the 40-year-old guys and the 6-year-old kids.
Yeah, that really looks good on it. But
well, I mean, they both act like children.
You know, some of them do. I'm not gonna lie. Some of them do. I mean, people can get really into these games.
They got kicked out. That acted like a little kid.
Let's not discuss that. I'll figure that out after the show. We're not gonna start bad mouthing people on the show. But
we're not bad mouthing. We're just telling the truth. The public has a right to know.
That's gossip. Not just gossip. But seriously, let's talk about aerospace combat. I know a while back I had written down all these rules for aerospace. Like, for those who are familiar with the classic BattleTech rules, they would essentially wouldn't really be on the battlefield per se, because they have what they call the abstract battlefield, whereas essentially one aerospace hex was equal to an entire map sheet in the battlefield, and they'd make wide sweeping turns, and about every two or three turns they'd come across and do a strafing run and attack a target or two. I mean, that's probably the model we want to pick up for MechWarrior Dark Age. You know, every two or three turns, have something come in.
So what would they represent for aerospace fighter?
See, that's the tricky part. We obviously don't have, a figure. I mean, there's...
closest thing we have is helicopters, and that's not really useful.
There isn't a whole lot to scale. I mean, maybe you could find some, the Robotech figures when they're in their plane mode that are... some of those figures are about the same scale as MechWarrior, but you don't really need the figures too much. They're just zipping across the battlefield.
Well, I mean, it just gives it for better reference.
It looks cool. You guys, take it and create your own figures. And there's a challenge for you. What you can do.
You go ahead and do that, and I will
one day.
Oh, boy.
Seriously, I already have in the past. I don't know why. And it weren't very good, but it went from MechWarrior.
That's just reminding me of the bad days of what's the card game you created?
Control Dominate Destroy. Oh, I'm bringing that out on this podcast one of these times because I was thinking.
Oh.
I was thinking we're watching the Command and Conquer 3 K-Edition DVD. Why is there no Command and Conquer board game?
Haven't they done anything besides games with Command and Conquer? There could be so many ideas for that.
I seriously want to do that in a coming episode. Get a couple people together and make a Command and Conquer game, or, well, technically a near future war board game that has nothing affiliated with any Electronic Arts proprietary intellectual property. Even though just they just lost stuff.
Just things that look exactly like it.
Yeah. Why is this dual-barreled massive tank? That's a Mastodon tank.
That's an elephant tank.
Yeah, elephant tank. That's not an orca. That's a killer whale attack. Seriously, though, let's get back to the aerospace fighters. But
that's not a stealth tank. It's a cloaking tank.
Yeah. But, like, the aerospace fighters, I'd say, what you'd probably do is, since you really don't know the secret formula that WizKids has for the point-sized units, you have to specify ahead of time, in addition to, say, you get your 600 ground points, you'd get so many aerospace resources. Maybe if you're going to do a point value of your resource, like, you create point values.
You'd probably have to do a test and retest on it, like, multiple times to determine what would be the closest to, you know, somebody winning and losing. And
a simpler idea might be to just kind of do a general class, like how Babylon 5 called the arms of their ships, where they don't have them assign a specific point value. They have like a raid level, patrol level, war level, battle level, assault level.
I just meant for there. A single, even a single aerospace fighter for point value in comparison to, you know, how it would affect the battlefield.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, yeah. That's what you're saying, but I'd say...
Also, how would what type of attack would it provide onto the actual field?
You'd have to choose. You know, obviously, aerofighters can carry energy weapons. They dive in, do a strafing run against one or two targets with the lasers.
Is somebody given a chance to destroy it, or is it just like a Battletech where...
Like, in Battletech, you could destroy the thing. If it was coming at you in a strafing run, you could
like
fire back
with
at
energy.
It.
But if it's running across... If it was running across, it was
going too fast for you to shoot it. Okay. It's coming straight at you, I think. I mean, probably what you'd do is you'd have to get a nice long, like, say, yardstick or something, and you'd place that down in a line of fire the way it's flying. It would be able to attack, say, two guys that are within maybe 3 inches of that or something, and anybody within maybe 3 or 4 inches of that line could try to fire back at it. It'd be hard as heck to hit it because it's just shooting in there, just diving in, firing all its weapons,
so
and getting out.
Guess it would be concerned to be given evade.
Yeah, at least evade. Probably, you're probably looking high defense. Seriously, 22, 23, 24 defenses with evade almost. I mean, because obviously then anti-aircraft units would have a much better chance
of getting
out of the sky. I don't know, you'd give them even upwards of maybe a +4 to the attack.
Streak missiles?
Well, streak missiles don't only work if you get a lock-on. If it's moving too fast, you get a lock-on.
True.
Because, I mean, there's, for some reason, no advanced radar tracking in Battletech, but...
Yeah. I cannot fire!
Yeah.
I can't see! Let me shoot myself!
Lock it on the nearest target. Uh-oh. Coming back at me! From The Simpsons, where they're... This is the one episode where they launch the weather balloon, and then, it's Big Butt Skinner on it. Bart puts a little banner on it, and then, what's his name? Brodsky really tries to shoot down the balloon with his rifle, and then there's F-18s flying above him, and the bullets fly by the F-18s, and it shows a little display, shows a little guy, like a little guy holding a rifle. It's like, identifying target, Iraqi fighter jet. Firing Sidewinder 1, he fires a missile, turns around, blows up his wingman. Mr. Bogey firing Sidewinder 2, fires a straight forward, comes right back at him, and blows him up. Yeah, so essentially streak missiles wouldn't help. A nice little diversion. So, but also you got bombing runs, you know, because there's back in classic Battletech is a. I keep saying back in classic Battletech is people are probably getting more and more angry at me. How dare you keep referencing that book? But you could do either like dive bombing where you go in really low and just like and go and drop your bombs across the ground, or you could do a high altitude, just drop and hope they scatter somewhere useful. So you know, like you know, high altitude bombing could be a type of artillery attack. You know.
Would there be, like, some wind?
Yes. There's rules for wind in class about that, if you really want.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I haven't played too much, except with you.
It's been years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we probably haven't played in class about that in 5-6 years.
Since we played with your brother. I think, was the last time we played.
Oh, that's got to be ancient, because he hasn't played in, like... He didn't like that game too much.
He played once with us, and we both slaughtered him, I think.
I think it's probably what happened.
After that, I think he hated us for it.
He always seemed to, the first round, take at least one of his mechs, take the gauze off with the cockpit. So that kind of got him ticked off.
It was a three-for-all, and we both teamed up on him.
Died!
He never liked me too much.
No, he never liked you at all for a number of reasons. For some reason, but we'll discuss that later.
You mean like me making fun of him every chance I could?
Yeah, yes, that could be work. But anyway, like you're saying, like with the high altitude attacks, making it just like an artillery attack. Maybe like you said, you could specify wind direction. So maybe what it would do is it would drift so many inches. Even it scattered like a normal artillery attack, but then make it even more complicated and make it drift back like 2 inches in base of the speed of the wind, so you could potentially overshoot a target and watch it drift back. But then you have to try
tornadoes.
To play the wind. Oh my goodness, tornadoes. We'll worry about the weather conditions later in another episode.
Oh my.
But like ripple bombing, where you go in really low, you'd almost drop them. You drop them immediately. They wouldn't be able to react. So obviously you couldn't have significantly.
Hey, if it's in a canyon and doing that, could there be like a piloting check to see if you don't crash into the canyon walls?
Yeah, pretty much. You'd say almost like if you start being shot at, you almost have to start making piloting checks. So you're doing evasive rolls, you're taking hits, and control surfaces get damaged. Like instead of like a movement value, because you really wouldn't have a movement value, you have a piloting value.
Exactly.
And then, like, on the quote dial you would create for the thing. So the quote dial unquote. You can't, well, again, if you're listening to us, you can't see me do little quotes in my fingers. That's what I'm doing every time I say, like, quote unquote dial or
whatever.
Yeah. But so, I mean, that'd be an interesting idea. Make it where you have,
because otherwise, you gotta make sure that they're not too powerful. And there's a risk to actually using them instead of having a point value. Here, look at me! I can just run around doing dive bombs and nobody can stop me!
And I think one thing that's along the line, guys, nobody can stop me. Back in the days of classic Battletech, when you had, like, say, the Stuka dive bomber, which is a 100-ton aerofighter, this thing is a freaking Atlas coming out of the sky. I'm rolling like four Ultra Autocan 20s or some ridiculous amount of ammo onto somebody. I think that's just ridiculous. First, I think that's ridiculous. So you have to make them, they'd be relatively fragile, maybe 6-7 clicks of life at most. So I mean, they can only take one or two shots before they have to basically pull out and get out of there.
Just to prevent the infantry from shooting them down.
Do you think infantry didn't most shoot them? Probably not.
Hey, you could always get a critical hit.
Yeah. I mean, well, even then, infantry weapons just... Then you gotta, because some infantry weapons aren't powerful enough to damage, and some
armor
of the bigger
piercing?
Battle armor, yeah. Some of the little guys, like...
My doggies?
your doggies can do it with their armor-piercing weapons. You have a peasant company. Groundskeeper Willie. Iraqi fighter jet, what? No!
Okay.
I absolutely love the Simpsons.
It's only been, like, 2 minutes since your last reference to the same thing.
That's not the funniest part of The Simpsons ever, I think. But, like peasant companies couldn't shoot down the dang thing. Maybe you should say you have to have a minimum range value of at least 8. So, you know, because obviously the aircraft are a little bit higher up in the air.
Well, it depends where you know, how would we measure distance?
You'd almost have to say, you basically measure, because you lay down that bar, the flight path.
Well,
whatever the closest point on the flight path is to you would be the distance, I'd say. Because that's,
I mean, what if he's, you know, more in the higher altitude?
Well, that's the thing. You have to say, like, well, obviously you have high altitude and low altitude. High altitude is where you only do the ripple bombing. Low altitude is where you do the dive bomb, or I mean, the strafing runs.
Yeah.
So low altitude, you're probably low enough that what you're within weapons range is about anybody if you pass close by him. High altitude, on the other hand, that might be anti-aircraft ability only, that firing that high up.
Maybe some mechs.
Some mechs.
Riflemen.
Riflemen should have anti-aircraft ability. That's what it was built for. But.
Yeah. Well, remember, they came out with it after the Riflemen. Did they?
No, the Riflemen was Lao and Counter... Well, it was Counter-Assault.
When did the AA come out?
Lao and Incursion or Death from Above. with the Death Above was the anti-aircraft and the VTOLs.
Oh, so I guess they only did, for some reason, only the infantry and, not infantry, I mean vehicles and aircraft?
Yeah, I mean, you could, I mean, no reason why you couldn't say that Rifleman has anti-aircraft ability. I mean, it's a house rule, do whatever you want with it. I mean, it is an anti-aircraft battle mech. But yeah, so I don't know, that's just the way they, Whiskers, did it, so. High altitude, low altitude, you probably say within 3 inches, you have to say within relatively close to the line of fire, but just because otherwise everyone in the Borg will shoot at them. And you really can't shoot at something if that's moving so fast unless you got a pretty good line of sight to it, kind of thing. In theory, but.
Yeah, in theory.
You could say maybe, if you're attacked by the fighter, when you fire back, you get whatever the fighter's normal defense would be. Say, maybe he has a spear man of the 22, 23, maybe evade even. Or maybe you give him a special type of special equipment. It's like a version of evade, where what it is
when it's not firing, maybe?
When you're being attacked,
yeah.
You don't, the fighter gets no bonus.
Yeah.
When you're flying parallel to it, the fighter does get a bonus.
Because it's, you know, more maneuverable, and but when it's actually firing at you, like, head-on, then
it's basically charging at you. You know?
Yeah.
So it's pretty easy to hit, in theory, to shoot something that's coming right at you.
World War II has proven that's not true.
Well, it's easier than trying to fire something that's going, like, supersonic speed adjacent to you.
Well, true, but...
That'd be a crazy thing to sit down... Maybe one day you can almost dedicate the entire podcast thinking of those rules for that, but...
Maybe we should actually do one of these battles one of these days.
We should try bringing in aerospace fighters, but I guess the whole idea is just give people ideas and let them run with it, so...
Yeah, but, I mean, since we have these ideas, we still should try. I mean, we shouldn't be splattering just ideas out of nowhere sometimes without even knowing what we're talking about.
Hey, we're just trying to help people out. I mean, you get ideas from anywhere. If you think our ideas are crazy and stupid, don't use them. And you don't need to listen to us if you think we're crazy.
Which we are. We are crazy,
though. We are crazy. I've admitted that several times, I think. But I remember,
You especially, not me. I'm quite normal. Don't pay attention to the giant monkey.
You're the giant monkey? I'm the giant monkey. I am. Oh, well, whatever. Giant monkey. Your eerie obsession with monkeys is disturbing.
I don't have an obsession with monkeys. They just seem to follow me all over the place.
Like the one in the corner over there?
Ah, the monkey! Get him away! Get him away!
Okay, here.
Yeah.
Too bad my roommate doesn't have any stuffed monkeys. That'd be hilarious. seriously, one more idea here before we get ready to end this random rambling of stuff up tonight. This is a really random episode.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the idea of the multi-phase battles, that's something I was going to say back, except I forgot to. Had this really cool idea came up in the past 2 weeks. Now, obviously, I haven't tried this yet, and I was going to make these really cool cards go along with it, but I haven't had time to do that either.
You don't have time for anything, do you?
I really don't, because I'm in the process of doing independent film. I'm taking a master's class, working 40 hours a week. So, but the idea was, the cars, what you do is, at the beginning of each phase, you basically randomly assigned maybe 6 cards out of this deck. And the type of cards were an objective card that would say, are you, like, trying to capture something? Are you trying, you know, like, the various objectives we covered in episode 7 last time.
So kind of like those objective mission cards that they have for MechWarrior.
Yeah, but they're more general than, say, you know, like the mission cards, you know, like, destroy a VTOL with a heavy mech or, you know, something like that. They're like, you know, capture these points, destroy the enemy.
A lot more reasonable.
Yes. They aren't just little bonus scoring things. But it was, then you'd have a terrain type. Like, you'd say, are you in a city? Or are you in a, maybe, like, you're out in the rural areas, you're in a farm. There's a like battle type. Is this a continuation of expanding on a larger battle, or are you getting reinforcements, or is this another smaller battle starting up that's going to be going parallel to the main mega battle?
So the mega battle could actually come into the parallel battle and influence that battle.
So the idea is, as you're going along, you're going to be having several small battles crop up, and they're going to eventually merge into one massive war. That's why you need like that 8x4, like an 8x4 foot table where you can have about 3 small battles going at any given time. Then you'd also have a length of time card. Like you'd have cards that say this battle would be 60 minutes, this battle would be 120 minutes, this battle might be until the objective's complete. This could be like a 30-minute battle. So the idea was we each had a set of cards we're working with.
Still listening to
and
us for
what we do
minutes.
Is we take turns placing down either say a mission card, a time limit card.
Keep downloading stuff.
Okay, so anyway, let's reshoot this thing. So I've gone ahead and created a new way of making it easy to create pages. Once you log into your account, and under your page listing, at the very bottom, you'll see a link for Easy Page Builder. So you click on that, and I'll present you with a very simple form. There's 10 things you got to fill in to create a page on the Army Showcase. You've got a page name. I'll call it, say, Jandar 400.
Just put Jandar 400.
Because obviously a HeroScape Army is Jandar. A page link. Call that. We'll just type it. You type something in there, and this is how you access your page easily by going to army.rockosoftware.com/your-page-link. You'll choose a game name, and obviously I'm doing some of the HeroScape here, so choose HeroScape. And then you've got 4 drop-down boxes where you choose the background color of the page. Let's make an obnoxious yellow color. The dialogue color, which is basically the background
brown.
Of the various items.
Do you have brown?
It's brown. There's a brown here.
Okay.
I've only got a subset of the full colors available to you, but...
Yeah.
And then you've got a border color that is so going to be red. And then you've got a text color, which is going to be this dark...
That's normal.
That's too readable. This needs to hurt people's eyes. It make their eyes bleed. Let's do this color.
That would make my eyes hurt. Thank you.
Then you've got a headline to fill in, which is basically the big header at the top of the page. So we'll call this again Jandar 400 Point Army. A page body, which is a little paragraph you can type in and type some of the figures you use, some tactics you might want to use. This would be useful info. And then last, you just got to upload a picture you have in your computer of your army. So we'll upload a picture of Tyranid Warriors, even though this is a HeroScape page.
Jason, you shouldn't post that kind of picture online. People may think differently about you.
And then you go ahead and hit build page. You'll get a message back at the top saying the page hasn't been built. Click here to view and perform any additional editing, because you can obviously go ahead and use now the normal editing tools that On the Army Showcase has to modify this page.
Excellent.
And then at the very bottom, it'll give you a link to the page, and then you can go ahead. And the last thing you have to do then is actually make the page public. So let me click here and view the page first. Let's see what this horrifically looking thing looks like. Oh, it could be worse. But then
yellow!
Click the link and it'll open up your new page, and you can see how you look, and you can edit it if you want. You can delete some stuff if you want. You can go ahead and blow a thing away if you wanted to.
Brown actually looks nice, though.
Actually, that isn't that bad of a
color. Yellow is just horrendous, unfortunately.
So then, the last
is there a limit to the size of the picture?
Yeah, there is actually. Because a free account gets you about 1,500 kilobytes of storage, but any individual picture can't be more than about 400 kilobytes.
Okay.
So kind of
important information.
It is. So go ahead and you can click the account link to take you back to your account. And now if you scroll to the bottom of your page listing, you should see the new page there, and the checkbox next to it is not checked because it's not public yet. So to make it public, just check the box, hit save, and now the page is public, and anyone can go ahead and view it. If you go back to the home page, you should see your page there in the new and the recently added armies. So, with that little quick tutorial on how you can easily create new pages, that's about all we got for the night. I'm Jason Rutherford.
And I'm Kyle Menzies.
And if you've got any questions, you can hold me at jason@rockosoftware.com.
And kyle@rockosoftware.com.
And just remember, the law of probability is conspiring against you. Have a good night.
Copyright 2007, Rocko Software. MechWarrior Battletech, Mech and Whiskey is our trademarks of Whiskeys Incorporated. The intro music Down With Everything is by The Transfer, was acquired from www.podsafeaudio.com.